I was told that my oldest golden retriever was failing. We had to make the decision for her humanely to euthanize her. And I sat for 40 minutes talking to my golden, who had been such an important part of her life, and saying goodbye. And I remember science today is helping us know what people have known intuitively for thousands of years, that animals are good for our well-being.
Professor Aubrey Fine, child psychologist and animal expert.
I've had many species of animals as companion animals that some of them have become co-therapists with me in working with children. Children that have ADHD, high-functioning autism, Tourette's syndrome, conduct difficulties, depression. When you're around an animal that makes you feel comfortable, it changes your heart rate. Your variable heart rate changes and your blood pressure goes down. There are many reasons why people have animals in their life, and for some it's hope. It's because they lack social connections. They may feel isolated. If we're looking at animal-assisted therapy, we see this work with people with PTSD, dementia, cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, persons with cancer. You know, dogs have tremendous nonverbal behavior. They read us sometimes better than humans read us.
Hey there, welcome to the Happy Habit Podcast. If you're new around here, I'm Matthew, and you'll find me here Mondays and Thursdays talking to many amazing experts in the fields of health, well-being and self-improvement. So if that's your thing, you're in the right place. If you're already familiar with these episodes and would like to show your support, you can do so for free. It'll take you no time at all. You can like, subscribe, share with other people who you think might enjoy these subjects and conversations too. You can do so via WhatsApp, email, Facebook, whatever way you want to. You can also leave the podcast a positive rating on iTunes and on Spotify. And if you're over on YouTube, check us out over there. Become a subscriber and you can click that bell notification for any future videos. And if you feel like doing so, you can leave any of my videos a comment too. Now, today I am talking with an animal expert. As we know, animals have an incredible effect on us as humans. They can dissolve a bad mood in a moment and melt our hearts on demand with a simple touch. And to talk to us about the science underpinning this is Professor Aubrey Fine. He is a psychologist and a best-selling author. He's also an expert in the field of children and animal therapeutic interaction. Professor Fine tells us what effects animals have on our psyche, but also how they change us physiologically. We hear the positive impact animals have on children with ADHD, autism, and lots of other conditions. Find out the varying reasons people choose to have a pet in the first place. And crucially, we hear how to process the loss of a pet that has come to be a beloved member of the family. As Professor Fine tells us how he dealt with the loss of his own golden retriever, Ketsy. Now, this is a really touching and insightful conversation with a man who has a deep love and respect for his animal companions, but also an appreciation for their power to help us become better human beings. I hope you enjoy. You are a psychologist who has worked in the field of human-animal interaction for many years now, and this is an unusual career path, I would think, but I'm sure it's immensely rewarding. And there's an irony, though, in this, in that I believe growing up you didn't have a pet and you were also afraid of dogs.
I was. Thank you for inviting me in. It's a real honor to do this. When I grew up in Canada, when I was a little boy, I never had pets. My mother didn't like them. And in fact, she often would get us very anxious when we would walk by dogs. She'd say, stay away, you know, you could get bit. And who would have thought that so many years later, our whole lives would be blessed? My first pet actually was when I was in college. It wasn't a dog yet, but it was actually, first it was supposed to be a mouse. I got a mouse and I got her a house. I'll do a little Dr. Seuss there. But when I brought the mouse home, my mother became super anxious again. And she kept on saying, don't drop the rat. It wasn't a rat. It was a little mouse. But I was so concerned about her well-being. I said, you know what? Let me keep the cage. Let me keep everything. But I went back to the store and said, you know what? Give me about 3 or 4 weeks. I'm not going to ask for a refund. Take back the mouse. And when I come back, I'll pick her up. So I did go back about 3 or 4 weeks later. And what ended up happening was I didn't take a mouse. I got fascinated with a small gerbil, very similar rodent, but it was different. And she was actually my first pet, and she was not only my first companion animal, but she became my serendipitous study, finding, not study, in recognizing the power of the human-animal bond. And in this case, I had worked, if I could tell the story, it'll do it quickly. I brought her to a program that I had developed for children with learning disabilities. Now, this is actually in 73, so we're going back many, many years. But when I brought her to the program, I only really wanted to bring her as my share. I had designed this program. These children weren't, today they wouldn't have only been called children with learning disabilities. There were children that had ADHD, high functioning autism, Tourette's syndrome, conduct difficulties, depression, lots of different etiologies, but they were there because it was a social skill training opportunity. So there I was in the cold of Canadian winter with my little cage, carrying Sasha, my little buddy, who we had developed a wonderful relationship. And I remember being greeted by children that ran towards me and asked, you know, why am I bringing this animal? And then they said, well, it doesn't look like a mouse. What is it? And I explained it was a gerbil. And then finally, a couple of kids, but more specifically, we'll talk about one, we'll just call him Alan, and that wasn't his name, said to me, you know what, before we even get started, can I hold her? And, you know, I hadn't even thought that far. But I said, you know what, come sit down with me, cross your legs. And then I asked him to take his palms. I'll move this camera for a second. I said, just want you to put your palms securely here because I want to make sure that Sasha feels comfortable. And so he had a big smile and he said, I will. And then I put Sasha in his palms. And first she meandered to and fro. And then finally she got comfortable and she started going up his tummy, then go back down. And the boy's eyes were beaming. Now, this is going back 51 years ago. I don't remember every detail, but I still remember this boy who today would have been diagnosed as having ADHD, highly impulsive, looking at me with a sense of tremendous pride. And I said, and he said to me, I promised you I wouldn't move. And I haven't. So that was my serendipitous aha walk into this whole area. And Sasha really changed my life because although I specialize in working with children, my interest in human-animal connections really grew from those early days. And over the years, I've had many species of animals as companion animals that some of them have become co-therapists with me in working with children, ranging from dogs, birds, lizards, bunny rabbits, guinea pigs. I never had another gerbil. Sasha was the one only gerbil. And what's fascinating is that over time, my mother developed a sweet spot for her. And when I left Canada to go to school in the United States, Sasha lived the rest of her life in the home of the lady that was afraid of animals at first. So it's a wonderful story.
It is indeed. And it's amazing, really, and your mother is evidence of it. It's amazing the impact that animals can have on humans. I mean, we have all experience of walking through the park and seeing someone with a dog, and the dog goes up and greets the stranger, and instantly that stranger's barriers are dissolved. And it's just extraordinary to see that interaction. Can you tell me, from your own experience, what is happening psychologically in that person once they interact with the dog, in this case, for example, or the gerbil? And what's happening physiologically in that person in order to help create that bond?
You know, it's a great question. And I think, you know, if you would have asked me this question 51 years ago, I would have looked at you dumbfounded and said, you know, I don't really know. But, you know, science today is helping us know what people have known intuitively for thousands of years, that animals are good for our well-being. And I always use this little commentary by saying, in many ways, surrounding yourself with a calm and comfortable animal is almost like experiencing a biological spa treatment on the spot. So in the early, late 70s, but the publication came out in the 80s, we started to get literature that showed that when you're around an animal that makes you feel comfortable, it changes your heart rate. Your variable heart rate changes and your blood pressure goes down. What's fascinating is if the dog is comfortable, because to develop this human-animal bond, it needs to be reciprocal, which means that it's not only all about us, it's also about the animal getting benefit. And so when an animal is really comfortable with us, its blood pressure goes down. So we could talk about that. That was some of the early work that got people that began to say, maybe it's much more than just puppy love. Maybe there's something more to this. And then, you know, as years of science changed, we were able to take cortisol levels with saliva, which is the stress hormone. And all of a sudden we recognize, again, when you're comfortably situated with an animal, especially if it was your own companion animal, your cortisol levels go down. And the same thing would go with the animal. And last part was probably the newer research that began in the early 2000s, initially in South Africa, where they studied some of the neurotransmitters. And, you know, so we've seen changes in dopamine and other neurotransmitters like serotonin. But what's really fascinating was the one thing that was noticed was changes in oxytocin. So those of the people that don't know what oxytocin is, you can look at it as being the love neurotransmitter. And in fact, we see an increase in oxytocin growing when moms are giving birth, because that helps with the delivery. And then, of course, when moms hold their infant to breastfeed, again, oxytocin goes up. But what's really interesting, and I always get excited about this, is the fact that when you gaze into a human's eyes, okay, that seems to be in those loving, sparkly moments that you feel, that's when oxytocin goes up. And so the same holds true with an animal, that when you gaze into their eyes, when you have that real connection with them, you see that. And so in many ways, there's that old saying that says that your eyes are the windows to your soul. Well, maybe there's a little truth to that when it was written long, long time ago, because in fact, that influence changes our neurobiology. And so I experience this all the time. But if you would have asked me this 51 years ago, the literature wasn't there. So science is catching up in helping us document some of the good parts. Now, we could also chat about some of the challenges in human-animal interactions and people being unkind or developing relationships that aren't reciprocal and mutual. But for many people, the relationships have very healthy benefits. But I honestly feel that many people get pets for a variety of reasons. You know, for some of us, we get pets because we like companionship. Sometimes it's the joy. For some people, it's protection. You know, I have a dog in my house and I feel more secure, although I giggle because I'm sure if someone came into my house, my goldens might bark for a moment, but then would say, well, come over and pet me. Maybe I'll show you where the cookies are and we'll become friends again. But I think there are many reasons why people have animals in their life. And for some, it's hope. For some, it's because they lack social connections. They may feel isolated. And we could even talk about COVID and some of the roles that animals filled during that period. But people that feel isolated and lonely at times truly benefit from the companionship. So give you lots of answers there.
Well, talking of that reciprocal relationship, I know you're at pains to accentuate that you do not use animals for therapeutic purposes, but you work with animals. Can you explain exactly what you mean here?
Yeah, no, I think I'm impressed that you read some of this material that you found. You know, I always would say, first of all, that when I work with my therapy animals, it's almost like Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. Now, I don't dance like Fred Astaire, and I wish it would be quite funny to see that kind of dancing routine. But we work very seamlessly together. These animals are sentient beings. And I learned that even before I understood the science. I'm an amateur magician. I wouldn't say a professional magician, but I do sometimes use magic in the work that I do with kids. And, you know, I remember a little boy, because one of the dogs that eventually became part of my family, a boy named her, because he said to me, you know, Dr. Fine, you think that the best magic you have are the tricks that you do with magic, but the best magic you have are the four-legged creatures that bring those emotional gifts. So that's how we named that dog Magic. But to answer your question, I think that over the years, I've really appreciated giving animals agency, which means, you know, they're not there for show and tell. They're there to help support, sometimes to lead, sometimes to support. And, you know, I could tell your listeners so many stories that are anecdotal, not with the science side to this, but the animals help me develop an atmosphere that's truly warm and inviting and comfortable. The animals do things with the youngsters that, of course, I don't do. When a child is crying, for example, the animal, the dog for this case, will perhaps put her head in your lap. The dogs will sit very close to you when there's a time of need. On the other hand, it's important to recognize that there are times that they recognize, hey, maybe I don't need to be as engaged, and they'll move away. So it is important that you brought up the notion that it's not this hierarchical relationship, that when I work with the animals, they really become part of me, or I become part of them. It's this mutual, actually, a mutual combination of their contributions. And again, the important part is that they're not toys, they're not objects. I remember years ago, just going one more line on this, when I used to do some book signings, people would always say, well, how come you didn't bring your dogs today? You know, they would have been nice. And I basically explain, when they're at home, they're dogs. They want to play. They want to have their rest. They realize when they come to work that they're at work, and it can be cumbersome. And so I'm very conscious of everyone's needs in that room. The people that are there to get help, the animals that work alongside me, so that that everybody in that environment is safe.
I think a classic example of that mutual symbiotic relationship that you're talking about between a human being and an animal is the guide dog or the seeing eye dog. I'm always really moved whenever I see somebody in the street with a guide dog, and you can just see that perfect relationship that they have. And what I wanted to find out from you, though, and this it will really help to illuminate this whole area of work that you've been involved with for decades, is what other kinds of people can benefit from that relationship, or developing a relationship with an animal? I believe patients or people with ADHD and autism, for example, can also benefit from these relationships. Could you talk to me a little bit more about this?
Sure. And I'm going to go backwards for a second, then go forward. Number one, we need to help people recognize that having companions in their lives as pets, or we could call companion animals, is truly a gift. I think, again, the little boy growing up in Canada to being a parent of young boys growing up to be men, our household was blessed with the value of having animals in our lives to share the lessons, to share the love, and sometimes to share the sadness. We know when an animal passes, how do we deal with that? So I wanted to make sure our listeners recognize this, but I also think that sometimes, if we're just talking about pets in the home, you really need to realize your lifestyle and what it consists of to best select animals that fit your lifestyle. Because I've always said that kittens grow up to be cats, puppies grow up to be older dogs, and our commitment needs to be, but this is selfish on my behalf, in saying it's a lifelong commitment. It's not they're here, they look cute, and all of a sudden we go, well, we're tired of them. But now answering your other question, over the years, from a science standpoint, we have recognized from a therapeutic side that animal-assisted interventions have been integrated with so many special populations. So if we're looking at animal-assisted therapy versus, we could talk about service animals if you're interested, but we see this work with people with PTSD, persons with dementia, people that if we're looking at the elderly population, well or frail elderly, people with physical chronic health conditions like cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, persons with cancer. We've seen this work in animals going to prisons to help people get sort of learning the lesson, the second leash on life, how they could train animals. And while they're training an animal and getting that animal maybe ready to get adopted, they start learning, hey, I'm learning better ways of communication. I'm learning patience. So there's a vast array of populations that could benefit. And it's funny that all of this began, I told you, my eye-opener was with a gerbil that was serendipitous. The grandfather of this field, in at least in the modern era, in the mid-1960s, Boris Levinson, well, he made the discovery of bringing his dog Jingles by accident too. So I think that I want people to recognize that what you're asking me is such a broad question, because I think I don't want people to only say, well, I'll have to go to therapy to get this unique opportunity. There's so many wonderful opportunities that all of us in mainstream world can benefit from having animals in our lives. But we need to think through this so that it's done again safely, correctly, and mutually beneficial. So, you know, what was it like in the olden days when I had four dogs and I had birds? When I would come home, it would be like the Calgary Stampede. The dogs would be running to the door, barking their guts out. The birds would be shouting. It's not like my wife was running to the door and saying, he's home. But because, you know, that sense of connection is so valuable. You know, if your viewers ever saw the old TV show Cheers. Cheers was this bar in Boston. And the people there weren't really going because they were alcoholics. They went to the bar, and we'll use a theme of that show, because everybody knows their name. In my case, the everybody's aren't only having two legs. Some of them have four, some of them have wings, and some of them slide like the bearded dragon.
Would you go so far as to say that through their interaction with animals, people become better at interacting with other people and become better humans in the process?
Oh, not all people. I want to caution that comment, because I told you there are people that abuse animals. There are people that have other concerns. But I have a little plaque, I wish I could run and show it to you, that says, I want to be the person that my dog thinks I am. And so it's funny. I wrote a book years ago that I'm not really wanting to go into, but I wrote a book years ago called Afternoons with Puppy, which were sort of the tales of a psychologist who every afternoon would work alongside his animals with people. And the last chapter of that book were some of the lessons that I learned, like perseverance, acceptance, patience, kindness. So answering your question on character development, if I use that word, so many of the changes that I've noticed with me are really related to my relationship with my animal. There's a large word that's called emotional contagion, which means that sometimes animals feel our emotions. Dogs are tremendous when you look at the history of their domestication. Thousands and thousands of years, these animals changed from wolves, so to speak. It was really one kind of wolf, and became more connected. And at first it was because they were able to fit into our little circle and gave us protection, maybe helped us hunt. But as years went on, and I think many of your listeners will appreciate this, they've always say that, you know, my dog really understands me. You know, dogs have tremendous nonverbal behavior. They read us sometimes better than humans read us. And now we've gone into cognitive animal, you know, dog cognition, and we're recognizing that dogs are a lot smarter than we ever appreciated. But it's not only dogs, right? Because, you know, that people can enjoy their relationship with their bird. My university was built on the land of Mr. Kellogg. Many of your listeners have heard of Kellogg's cornflakes. Well, Mr. Kellogg, who actually was in Michigan, owned land in California. And in the late 20s, he donated that land to the state of California to become a university. We endowed that land and became California State Polytechnic University. But we have 90 Arabians that are on our campus. What a gift it is to go by and see these Arabians. And I have a best buddy that happens to have four legs and weighs about 1,100 pounds. I've been there for all the births of her children. In fact, I was there yesterday hanging out with her. Even when I'm retired, we visit two or three times a week, and I'm her snack friend, and then I just brush her, and we take walks together. And so, again, connections are important. And although I love science, you know, Einstein was attributed, although he wasn't really the person that wrote, that first came up with this statement, that some things that are important, we understand, and some things that are important, we really don't understand why it occurs. And I think that sometimes science is capturing the globalness and the tremendous impact that what we're talking about. But again, when you talk to your neighbors, they look at you with astonishment and say, "I knew this already. I cried. I laughed. I smiled, I shared my life with an animal." And I think that that's the lesson that I think is important. I think we need to appreciate the fact that science is only helping us advance what we're talking about. And maybe we'll change public policy where communities may be more understanding in establishing green belts, have fairer guidelines for people to have animals to coexist, because the richness that comes to the table is what is important.
For many of the audience, their pets are like family members, and sadly, whenever they lose them, they feel like they're losing a family member. What advice would you have to help people cope with that grief or that loss?
That's a tremendous question. And some people ask me personally, and then we can go more generally to others, you know, why do you do it? You know, why do you go back knowing that their lives are shorter? And honestly, I say that love in your heart is important to give away. And I feel that the love that I share, and I want to make sure you heard that word share, is as valuable as the pain that I feel. Because if I can personalize this, is I was on a boat cruise in October, and I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when I was first on the land, when I was told that my oldest golden retriever was failing. And I told the person, "Let's bring her to the vet," and I was able to communicate. But at some point in time, we had to make the decision for her, humanely, to euthanize her. And so I tell you this story to then lead into the question. At 8:30 p.m. in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, pitch black, I was able to connect finally on Zoom, because that was, we couldn't do it on the phone. And the vet was ready, and I sat for 40 minutes talking to my golden, who had been such an important part of her life, and saying goodbye. And I remember at the end of the conversation, after telling her how important it was, and some people might find this silly, but then I looked in her eyes and said, "I need you to understand we're going to say goodbye now. And I want you to listen to me, because I'm going to stay here until you fall asleep." So to answer your question, what do? You Number one, there was a movie years ago that I think brought this really to the forefront of so many people, Coco, which is a cartoon. And there's a song, Remember Me. And we've always said, when a being is remembered, they're never gone. So how do you overcome physical loss, but recognize that over time, remembering brings you smiles, brings you tears, but lets you hold on to something, someone that you love. For some people, when they lose a pet, and I think things have tremendously changed, where now people don't say, well, you lost your dog. Well, just go get another dog. It's just a dog, or it's a bird or a lizard. People now appreciate what you said. Animals are part of our family, and they're not so disposable with emotions. So it's okay to grieve. Now, today, we understand that grieving is important. It's okay to do other things while you're grieving, making a scrapbook, talking about the animal. All of these things are very important to do. So I apologize, I didn't realize that phone was on, but I think that doing things to help you work through your feelings are important, but it is okay to grieve. It is okay to share your emotions. It's okay to say, I lost a friend that was meaningful. So in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, when this was happening, I grieved. And one of the ways that I handled it was, one, I wrote four letters on a ship each day to an animal and myself that I would put into her little urn. And I did other things, but I didn't deny her, and I didn't deny myself the opportunity of saying goodbye. And that's an important part of a good relationship, is it's important to be honest with yourself. Sometimes you need some help as well. You might need to talk to a counselor. There are grief counseling groups for pets as well.
Well, that's a lovely response, and I appreciate you being as candid as you were about such a difficult event in your life. And I suppose I'm prompted to ask the question then, because you have worked with children throughout your lifetime, is the loss of a pet to a child an opportunity for that child to learn a philosophical lesson about life and loss?
Absolutely. You know, people say that I don't want people to get pets in their lives for that reason. For many children, the loss of a pet is their first experience with death. Because the hardest part of getting an animal, and I preface it, the conversation, is in most cases, we know when we get an animal that that animal will not live as long as us. And that becomes hard. That is a life lesson. But the one thing that I share with so many people is, we know two things about life, right? There's birth and there's death. And in many ways, we get excited for birth. We become very, very, for some of us, become very emotionally distraught when the being passes away. And what I try to do is give people the message that in between the beginning and the end, there's something that we call the middle. And that middle is the life that you celebrate with that animal. And we focus on the middle, but we also recognize those two pivotal points. It's so exciting when you see that puppy come home. It's equally as emotionally devastating for some people, for many people, I would say, when that end comes. But I don't want your listeners to focus on that. Really, as I just alluded to, it's the middle. While you have it, enjoy it. While you have it, cherish it. Enjoy not only our relationships with animals. The lesson is, enjoy what you have while you have it in life. Because so many people live with regret. And I try every day to live my life with that optimism of the moment. And for me, the moment is awe. You know, you hear aha moments. Well, awe is, waking up in the morning and seeing the sunrise. Well, For some people, they go, big deal. I know that that happens every day of the year. But it's when you can't see it, you go, my goodness, that's something different. And so my experiences with my pets is not, every day is an awe-opening period. But every day when I see them, I'm filled with joy. My wife sometimes tells me, because I told you about that horse at my university, her name is Amber. If I'm feeling a little grouchy, she'll say, go play with Amber. And then that oxytocin in me flies high. My relaxation is tremendous. I get it from my dogs, but for some reason, when I visit that horse, I just shiver in joy that connection's there. So I think it's important to recognize it's just not, you know, I love dogs and all kinds of animals, and I'll visit, and my wife gets embarrassed when I'll shout out, tell me how old your dog is, or I'll walk over and say, may I pet your dog? But in reality, it's the cultivation of that relationship. It's allowing that being to touch your heart. And when that happens, and you can be able to touch their heart, remember, the reciprocal, mutual, beneficial relationship, it can influence both the psychological as well as the physiological benefits that we've talked about.
This podcast is called the Happy Habit Podcast. And yeah, just talking with you now, your happiness, your optimism, and your joy of life shine through. I think you're an inspiration. And thank you so much, Professor Aubrey Fine, for spending a little bit of your time with me today. I've really enjoyed our chat.
It was wonderful, wonderful to be with you. My best.
Well, thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Happy Habit Podcast. If you liked it or any of the previous 400 plus episodes, show your support, like, subscribe, share with other people in your life who you think might enjoy this content too. Leave the podcast a positive rating on iTunes or on Spotify. If you're over on YouTube, check us out over there, become a subscriber, click that bell notification for any future videos, and leave a comment on any of the videos that you enjoy. Until next time, stay happy.